about to realize how in love we are with each other. Yeah.
We also flirt a lot with each other.
We love to love each other. That's something.
Okay, podcast listeners.
Yeah, let's get real serious.
We're trying.
No jokes. No jokes, Natalie.
Something magical is happening. Kristen and I are going to try to keep our composure, but something that you've been waiting for a very long time and we've been waiting for potentially our whole lives has now happened.
It's happening right now at this moment. You're here in history-making time. We are in the legendary back house of Rob Bell. That's right. Rob Bell, we are so excited.
All he's doing is giggling at us because he's like, what have I gotten myself into?
He's totally stuck. He's like, are they going to giggle the whole podcast?
Right. Yes. They know the address.
They're scaling the walls again.
Oh.
So, Rob, we would like to welcome you. Many of you in our community know about Rob because we have spoken about him at length for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
But those of you that are listening and are like, who are they fanning over? Immediately Google his picture. Very handsome, but he's married. But he is here with us today. He is an incredible pastor, author, musician, kind of a legend in the spiritual community.
That's exactly right. Yeah. He is a New York Times best-selling author with books like What We Talk About When We Talk About God and Love Wins. And he has a new book coming out this month, May 16th.
May 16th. Yeah.
Ooh, and you might have seen him on like Oprah Soul Sunday or her tour. He's like best buddies with Elizabeth Gilbert. Sometimes I listen to them talk and pretend like I'm a third wheel with them. And
but guess what?
What?
Now we're here.
Yes.
Exactly. Here we go.
Here we go.
It all worked. So welcome. Thank you for being part of our party.
Hi. How you doing today?
Fantastic. Yeah. I went surfing. Then I took my daughter to dance.
Yeah.
What else did we do? I met a friend. We're working on a screenplay. Then I met this scholar I've admired for years. Then maybe we'll make some dinner after this.
It's fabulous.
Yeah. It's a great day.
It sounds like a great day.
So would you mind letting our viewers know? So our viewers are primarily artists. So actors, musicians, writers, directors. Would you mind giving them insight from you of what you do and how you feel that has anything to do with creativity or arts?
Totally.
Go.
I love it. When I was in college, I was in a band, and we thought we were going to be the next REM, which dates us. And that band was like Violent Femmes meets Midnight Oil meets Red Hot Chili Peppers meets, that was like where we lived, early Talking Heads. So I was like front man, and creating something and sharing it with people was, I'd always been on the outside. There was always somebody smarter. There was always a better student. There was always a better athlete. There was always, everybody else seemed to have secret knowledge to me. Mm. And when growing up, it's, everything's always ranked. They're the best everything's, the most cool kids, the popular kids, the kids with the better clothes. But then when I got in this band in college, it was like, oh, this is, It wasn't like I'm good at this, or it was, oh, this is me. Mm-hmm. Like making things, and I was the front man, so like writing lyrics and sharing them somehow was like the tuning fork. Oh, this is what I'm here to do. But then the band broke up like college bands do, because everybody has to go get jobs. And I was teaching water skiing in northern Wisconsin and volunteered. There was like this Sunday morning religious service, and I volunteered to give the sermon at it, which is like, what? Because a sermon to me had always been, when I had sort of visited church, was like, that's the most boring thing in the world. But something within me was like, oh, I should try that. And I got up to give the sermon and was like, took off my Birkenstocks because I had this awareness. I would have been 21. Oh, the ground, like a holy ground, like, oh, your life is never going to be the same again.
Wow. Yeah.
And there was something about the sermon. Like, you think about Martin Luther King, I Have a Dream. That was like somewhere between performance art and guerrilla theater.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody heard that sermon and then was like, oh, it was funnier last week.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody evaluated that. You were caught up in something that was dangerous and healing and subversive and provocative. And you learned something and you were confronted. And something within me was like, I'm going to reclaim this art form that has like zero street cred. Like, I'm sure even for your listeners, like, sermon is like, what? Mm-hmm. You mean like a sermon? But it was like the roots of the sermon are like dangerous, beautiful. It's an art form that got hijacked somewhere along the way with a thousand things that we all just want to throw up in our mouths about.
Mm-hmm.
But something within me was like, I'm going to reclaim this, not as like a propaganda device to get people into a religion, but as like a gift, like a, this is for everybody, yeah, like an experience mm-hmm. that we can all have.
Mm-hmm.
So it was literally at 21, like, this is what I'm going to do. So then, like, in the world I came from, then you would go to seminary. So I, like, went and studied Greek and Hebrew, did all that, did, like, a master's of divinity. Blah. But even then, the whole time, it was like, and actually, at that time, I studied with a legendary African-American preacher who had been involved in the civil rights movement. So even then, I was, like, exposed to people who were like, oh, yeah, I'm not the first person to think about this like an art form, like poetry and sort of physical poetry. So I think at some level, all of my work stems from creating space. I think a lot about architecture, creating space, podcast, a tour, an event in New York, even a book is to some degree creating space where people can see and hear things.
And I think of it as like being a storyteller, right?
And a lot of it. So what happened to me is then I like went into church world, but was like, I don't fit here. Like, these people aren't talking about, I'm after something else. But then it was storytellers, comedians, furniture designers. Like, I would bump into people and be like, oh, whoa, that's, I'm more doing that than what you'd call pastors.
Mm-hmm.
So quite quickly. And then, like, by, a friend of mine, Zach, is the drummer in Jimmy Eat World.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working on something like a giant sermon, like an hour and a half thing. And he introduced me to his booking agent, and I started doing club tours like a band would tour.
Yes.
I love that.
Love that.
Like, and so that was actually, that was actually like, oh, this was always meant to be in public space where we exchange ideas with each other. Mm-hmm. So that was like 2006 when it was really, oh, this was always where it was meant to go. Got it.
Yeah, it's like, in a way, I think of it so similar to theater, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And that you're taking an audience or a group of people to a transcendent realm.
Right? Absolutely.
Through telling a story, and there's an aha moment, like a climax in a story, where you watch an audience, you can feel group consciousness flip in
absolutely.
A great show, and the same thing in a great sermon.
And the world that I came from, nobody was talking about this, but I was like setting things on fire, and I would have something planted in the audience, and I built a flamethrower for a sermon, and like I would have stuff hidden under people's chairs, and so I was always, I would set things up, and I would talk in the middle of the room and leave the stage empty, and then but I didn't have any reference points, and then I would meet like a playwright. And they'd be like, oh, we have a word for that. Mm-hmm. Or my comedian friends would be like, yeah, that's called a callback. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, oh, no way. So literally, I developed all of this intuitive language for what I was doing, creating tension and then releasing the tension.
Mm-hmm.
Breaking down the fourth wall was something I was doing. And then someone said, oh, you know, there's this thing called breaking down the fourth. So all these people would come along over the years and be like, you know, there's a name for that. I'd be like, no way. That would have been so helpful.
Theater in the round. That's what I was doing. Got it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, it's so fascinating because I think a lot of what we try to empower people to know is that everything you need is already inside of you. There's a flawed kind of conditioned thinking of if only this on the outside world changes, then I'll be happy, then things will be better.
If I
get the better agent, if I
get
this next job, you know, everything.
Oh, my word, right.
But that the intuitive nature of the creative process, that actually the creative process is inside of us.
Yeah.
We talk about it from the yogic perspective of like the second chakra, which is the energy center that is housing of your emotions, your creativity, and your sexuality. And it's all inside of you. So you don't need an outside access point. You just need to trust in the process that's already living inside of you.
And so many people have such fascinating things going on inside them, and they don't know this. I met a woman the other day in one of those, like, you're somewhere at a party or something, and someone's like, what did you do? And a woman said something like, oh, I was a nurse. Like, and it's like, oftentimes that sort of thing is like a wall. Like, okay, anyway, would you like another drink? Mm. But I was like, oh, really? For how long? And it was something like 35 years. Oh, really? So there was a day when you were done being a nurse. Yeah. And she looks at me like, where are we going with this? And I was like, so you went to work the last day? Did you like have a box with all your things from 35 years of being a nurse? Like, do you have like a little locker? Yeah, I did actually. What was it like to drive out of the hospital parking lot after 35 years of going there every day? And she started talking about what that was like. I was like, what was it like when you woke up the next morning? And you didn't go to the hospital after 35 years of waking up and going to the hospital to be a nurse. And it was fascinating. And this woman who was like, I was just a nurse, but now I'm not doing it anymore. But like, it's like, how often are you like one or two follow-up questions?
Oh yeah.
From something actually very interesting.
And that actually we don't have that curiosity about our own selves.
Right.
We're so not curious about our whole interior landscape, but we want to go to space and do all these things outside.
Yes, exactly. You know?
But
exactly.
There's so much fascinating information that we could be accessing.
One of the things that I think is so interesting about your story is it seems like you were so self-motivated that you were really listening to inside, like, what am I curious about? What do I want to explore? Like where am I, is life leading me to create something new or try something new? Which I think is something that when we talk to creators about, you know, it's changing that script instead of thinking I need to go get a job out there.
Right.
Looking within and it's like, what is there in me that wants to be made through me?
Absolutely. The great artist Robert Irwin talked about pursuing a line of inquiry.
Yeah. Mm.
And then you get a bunch of answers. And those answers create a bunch of questions. And so then you pursue those. And I think calling is overrated and curiosity is underrated.
Oh, I love that.
So you'll have whatever nomenclature people use, like I'm called, or this is my thing, or this is my, and so they're sticking to this. Sometimes there's a dramatic experience and they're like, I'm a director. And so they're holding so tightly to this instead of what would get you out of bed in the morning. Yeah. What are you curious about? And if you did that, it would probably be fairly interesting.
There's this beautiful Sanskrit quote that translates loosely in English as, your truth is real, reality changes.
which That's a good
one. Which I love because it's whatever the truth is of this moment is true for you.
Yeah.
But can you be flexible enough to know that it doesn't have to be the truth for longer than this moment in time?
Right, because it might look very different.
It's like how we get, when you're talking about, like, we get stuck in roles and we want to label ourselves as something as opposed to, like, follow that line of where we're being led, which often leads us to very places that can be kind of scary or where we can
feel
insecure.
Right.
Yeah, it's on the edge of the unknown.
Yeah, and my wife and I and some friends started a church in Michigan and it grew very, very big, mm-hmm. like 10,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in a previous life, I was a pastor of a mega church in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And now I do like a regular show at Largo here in West Hollywood. And it's actually just a long, continuous pursuing of a line of inquiry.
Yes.
On the inside, it's very different and yet it's not. Mm-hmm. It was just, this is where the questions took me. That's where the life was.
And what was that process like for you to go from, I mean, I'm sure there was like, I'm imagining it from the lens of like our actors, right? It's almost like the feeling in the acting world of, you know, I booked this big job and I got all this attention and then all of a sudden I went to this other gig that I was really more passionate about, but like the film didn't go anywhere and no one saw it. That kind of feeling, you know? Like to make that transition from such a grand number to such a different style. Right?
Such a different style. Smaller. Obviously we have to pay bills. So let's just put that over here. How much money you're getting paid, how many people are watching, that may be all over the place. Mm. There's a YouTube star on our street who gets 2 million views a day, puts a video out every day of like pranking people. And then in Moby's new autobiography, he tells about being at a David Bowie show where people were walking out because they were bored. Mm. So we live in a world where people are making millions of dollars just making turd sandwiches on YouTube and where people are walking out of David Bowie.
Mm.
Yeah.
So it's not all up and to the right. It will probably have all sorts of weird ebbs and flows. Mm. And that's just how it is. And sometimes you're doing, sometimes no one saw it. And it was and you were more alive than ever. So I think the first thing, and the number of people I meet who are like, yeah, but more, less people may whatever. Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Welcome to how it works.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And do you have any other interest? Do you have any interesting questions in there? Because that's right. Just how it works.
Yeah.
Right. Like sometimes I always, when we talk about like the you're entitled to your labor, but not the, fruits of your labor. Mm-hmm. So your job is to show up and make the thing, but you don't know if it's going to be for the masses or if it's going to be for two.
Right.
You show up for the integrity of the action itself, not from the result that might come from it.
Absolutely. There is a book in my computer that's never been released. There's at least, I think, two. Mm. Like, you have no idea. Like, they just, I don't know. Like, you just keep making things and stepping up. You have no idea. If I could crack that, why certain things catch and why certain things don't. And the number of times I've been doing a live event and gone in thinking, angels are going to come through the ceiling on this one. This one is levitation, mass levitation. And then at the end, I did this thing. This was probably 10 years ago where I recreated the solar system using those exercise balls.
Yeah.
And I handed them out to the crowd. And then I had hooks hanging in the ceiling and it was in the round and I would hand them out to the crowd. And then people would hang those giant, they would stand on their chairs and hang them from the ceiling so I could recreate the solar system. And then I had a disco ball hidden in the ceiling and had it brought down to be the sun and played the Saturday Night Fever sun check as it came down. Like I had this thing like orchestrated within an inch of its life thinking that people are going to just be blown and somehow connected. It's almost embarrassing how great I thought it was and how big. And at the end, I'll never forget the end. The room it was 3,500 people, the room going like dead. Like a weird, not like a real, like reflective, whoa, that was some amazing spiritual teaching, but just like I don't know, it's like a Radiohead sermon. I don't get it.
Yeah.
I'm not cool. Apparently I'm not cool enough because I don't get it.
Wow.
Well, I think go ahead.
And then other times, exhausted, jet lagged, you go up in front of an audience, give them this little poo-poo platter of smattered nonsense. And people are like, that's the best thing you ever did. Like I said, I'm out.
Who knows?
I no longer have any idea where up and down are.
Well, I'm so, you know, I think for so many of the people that we talk with and work with who are creators, you know, I know so many writers who like never want to write again because one thing failed.
Yeah.
So I'm so curious about what is the thing in you that doesn't have attachment to how it does or that keeps you going.
Oh, right.
You know what I mean?
You're throwing things against a wall.
Yeah.
Mm. And the joy is you get to throw things against the wall.
Mm.
The joy is the work and that you are here on this ball of debris hurling through space at 67,000 miles an hour, rotating at 1,000 miles an hour. Paris is going 600 miles an hour in a Milky Way galaxy that's going 600,000 miles an hour. It's 100,000 light years across. And you're here breathing. And you get to make stuff. Let's just start there. Mm-hmm. No, you just make lots of stuff. If you want a 10-song album, you have to write 100 songs.
Yes. Yeah.
And if something actually, somebody somewhere, it connected or it moved them, to me, it's all, that's the cake. And the frosting is how somebody might respond.
Yeah. There's this beautiful study. I want to say it was at Harvard, but I would have to like relook it up. But we taught on it once where there was like the students were divided into two groups. And the first group was told they had to make the most beautiful bowl that they could.
Oh, yeah. That's an art and fear.
Art and fear. Yeah. And then make as many bowls as possible.
Yeah.
And then the group that just made all the bowls and like didn't care about how they looked ended up with the most beautiful bowl. Because it was all just about the practice, the art, the routine, the not caring, the opportunity to create.
Right.
Just make as much as you possibly can in the time you can make it.
Yeah.
And with that level of detachment, like you'll make something more beautiful than your ego can allow you to make if you're trying to get it right.
Thank you. At some spiritual level, you have to turn your edit button off.
Mm.
So that's why it's fun to have Christmas with kids because they just open a present and are like, just filled with joy. They're not standing at a distance going, oh, look at me, ironically smiling while I open the presents.
Yes.
And oftentimes people are split. They're having the experience and they're observing themselves having the experience.
Yes.
Because no one wants, like the worst thing would be to appear naive.
Mm.
or like you're just enjoying it without any like, but I'm now I realize, of course, that this is sort of ridiculous for me to be enjoying Michael Jackson right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'm kind of above, I'm sort of, there's these Canadian philosophers of a book. It's not called The Rebel Cell. And they talk about it. It's not enough to have Radiohead in your CD, in your car. You also can't have Bon Jovi. The cool is about distinction. It's not just what you are, it's what you're not. They do this whole book on the philosophy of cool.
That's awesome.
It's like you have to, we all have to know what you also think is cheesy.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Yep. Like the ego loves that distinction of like, oh yeah, no, I would never buy for that.
I'm this, but I am not this.
Right, right. Yeah, and then you invent this category called guilty pleasure for things that you're embarrassed that you like, that you're like, but you have a special kind
of,
which
still
is all
stand
standing
it.
At a distance
yes.
from your own experience. But the great moments are actually the moments when you're just one and you're just here having the experience and you're not like arms folded analyzing it.
We so often talk to artists about trying to regress back to the place in you that first wanted to be an artist.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the little kid that just wanted to play and make make plays with their cousins who didn't care how much SAG was paying for that particular job. Do you know what I mean? Like, we get so obsessed with the contract and the this and the that, but like, where is the joy that led you to want to do this in the first place?
Yeah.
Where did it get lost along the way?
Just today, I was working with dancers all day long, and it was so fun to be like, okay, we're making a silly musical. This is stupid and this is dumb. And so like, we're going to allow ourselves just to be goofy. And I love to like, be like, let's say all the bad ideas out loud just to get them out of our system.
Right?
Yeah. Like, so let's throw everything, like, don't like, just say it all out loud. And it's a free room. And like, if we, and I know that if I feel like I'm 5 years old, I might be getting to something interesting. The moment that I think like I want to do a good job of it, or I can watch myself like get tight, I'm like, oh, time for a break. Yeah. You know, there's something in me that
absolutely
has an agenda. Yeah.
Mm. Absolutely. And if you move that way, then there's a chance you might actually make something interesting at some point. Mm. But it will be, there's this line in the New Testament, grace upon grace. Mm-hmm. There's the grace that you got to do it or try it or take a shot at it. And then if it actually, if you actually did get paid, or if you actually did, somebody did what was moved or connected with it, then you're just stacking grace on top of grace.
Yeah.
That's and this book that comes out in a couple of weeks, this is the 10th book.
Wow.
Somebody finding the book meaningful or something, I'll be like, no way, that's amazing. Or I'll go on tour, and when people show up, I'll honestly to the crowd be like, you all, to this day, 25 years in, a crowd, I'll be like, they came.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that wonder and
it's
awe.
It's always humbling.
Is the if you lose that, then just go do something else.
Would you tell us about the book so that we can all get it? And then when you come to New York, just so you know, we're going to bring all the community and we're all going to go.
Come wherever you're doing your book signing, we'll just like come stalk you.
Yeah.
You don't have the book.
No, we don't.
Is it here?
Oh, oh my God.
Like
oh my
little God. Girls oh on Christmas God. Morning.
Remember the five-year-old we were just talking about?
They're they both just
here.
Came out.
Yeah.
Oh, do you think
maybe when we're done on the way out, we'll have
oh
to
my
take
gosh.
Care of that.
That would be exciting.
I know. They came today.
They came today?
I know, right before you got here.
Oh, it's like
first
someone
company.
Was looking out for
yeah,
us.
We, the divine was like, I'm going to bring you all the good things
from
today.
The get-go. Cue the arrival of the books.
Kristen and Natalie are coming.
What's interesting about the title of the book is most people are like, seriously, that's the last thing I'd read. So I'm just aware of that. The book is called What is the Bible?
Yep.
How an ancient library of poems, letters, and stories can transform the way you think and feel and everything. Because what happened to me is, so in the tradition I came out of, you gave a sermon from the Bible and what could be more lame in our culture. But then I started actually reading and studying the Bible and was like, wait, this is like dangerous, subversive poetry about loss. And it's as much about the absence of the divine than the presence. And this is about the growing gap between the rich and poor. There's a direct line from Bernie Sanders to the Hebrew prophets. And this is about leaving a corner of your field for the widow, the orphan, and the refugee among you. This is about being liberated from whatever enslaves you. This book, and even all the violent stuff. Yeah, 3,000 years ago, when people conquered another tribe, they did it in the name of their God. So does it surprise you that a book that's 3,000 years old would at times act like a book that's 3,000 years old? So I just got into this and was like, wait, this is, and when like the story of Mary being pregnant with the baby Jesus and the prayer that she gives is like the original Rage Against the Machine. Like she's shaking her fist at the Roman Empire who have crushed everybody in the name of their military industrial complex. Like this is all the stuff everybody's talking about So what happened to me over the years is I just realized this book is actually a progressive book that shows you what it looks like when people wake up.
One of the things.
So it's like the worst street branding of a book ever. And I'm simply saying, no, pretty much everybody's misreading this book. So here's actually a way to read it.
I've heard you say before that the Bible is a record of ever evolving consciousness.
Yes, exactly.
I love that. Yes. And
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
Well, just that, you know, I was raised in a Christian environment and had my own search to find what resonated as truth for me.
Yes.
And when I heard you use that language, I was like, oh yes. I was like right. I felt like growing up even as a kid, I was waiting for someone to decode you could feel was underneath it trying to get to you.
But the preacher is going on about how, well, you know, some people are pagans. And you're like, really? That's the best we could do. Mm-hmm. So an example would be Noah in the flood in the ark. I think everybody gets killed except for one guy. Pretty much that's the story. But if you actually look, lots of ancient cultures had flood stories. So flood story wasn't that unique. And in the ancient flood stories, the gods are angry with people, so they crush everybody. The Noah in the flood story kind of looks like all the other flood stories until the end when this god of the Noah story says, I'm not going to do that again. I'm going to live at peace with everybody, which was a brand new idea.
Mm.
So ideas that we now take for granted, at some point those ideas were new.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting in the Bible is how many new ideas about justice, fairness, equality. Some argue that in the book of Colossians is the first place in human history where someone argued for the equality of the sexes.
Mm.
So there are all these things that people don't know about because they're like, isn't it kind of cruel to women? Actually, it's a story about women being rescued from patriarchy and having more and more rights and power and dignity and all that. So,
I truly love so much about that is in the yoga text, they talk about that there's only one thing that causes suffering and it's linking things together that shouldn't be linked together.
Oh, that's so good.
And so correct linking is liberation. And
yeah.
So when I first found your work several years ago, and I was really studying the sutras at that time, I was like, oh my God, I really feel like that's what Rob's doing is de-linking these ideas that have caused us suffering because we were raised in a place where we're told you should believe this and you should act this way and do these things, but something's not resonating and it's causing us suffering.
It's not working.
So to be able to de-link and tell a different story is the liberation that I was seeking, and studying these texts in the Vedic traditions and Samkhya philosophy that were written at the same time and being like, oh, it's all the same ideas. So it really opened up this beautiful thing for me to study it in a different way. So
that's fantastic.
That's why I'm fangirling. So cool.
That's fantastic.
So cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you had the sense that there was something more going on just below the surface.
Absolutely. Well, it was interesting for me because as a kid, I felt such a connection to the divine in church, right? So when we were singing the songs, you know, when we were I was like, oh, there's something so real. I can feel spirit. I can feel the presence of spirit as a kid. And then as I was getting older and would be taught like the rules, I was also a girl who loved musical theater. So every man who loved me in my community theater was a gay man. And then I'd be in church.
Right.
Hearing, you know, these like rules.
Right.
And something inside my soul went, these two do not belong together.
Yes.
I feel the presence of the divine and there's so much love there. And then there's this thing that doesn't feel like love. And so what I did was I pushed the church away completely for a long time.
Yeah.
And, it wasn't until I was in college, I mean, in the mysteries of the universe, I kept being pulled to things to direct as I realized I was a director that were about faith. It was like there was something inside of me that was trying to reconcile.
That itch doesn't go away.
It doesn't go away. Calls you back.
Yeah. That's a good story.
So what advice, if any, would you give to any artist who's listening, anyone who's on their path that is, you know, just looking for any kind of inspiration about what it is to be creative, what it is to be an artist. Any words of wisdom?
I would begin with, do not fear the full spectrum of your experience. Doubt, rage, anger, abuse, abandonment, betrayal. go into all those places because you will come out the other side.
That was your book that you talked about, the link between suffering and creativity.
Oh, yeah.
That was beautiful.
You won't be the same person. And that's what's interesting is when someone doesn't just stuff it all down there.
Yeah.
That your interiors are actually very fascinating.
And if we're called to tell stories, there's other people watching who have those same stories that don't have the ability to tell those stories in the mediums that we have the ability to.
Yeah, and I think sometimes you have to see it. You get to make, something's in you that wants to be made, so you get to do this. So if you have to pay your bills doing something else, but blaming things on, you aren't a victim. You get to actually make some things. Mm. So it's all comes from this overwhelming sense of gratitude.
Mm. Mm.
You get to try some things. So if you can keep that before you, all sorts of interesting. But the moment it's like the industry owes me or this town doesn't have good art, never, interesting things never come from those postures.
Mm.
But I had this idea and I just tried it and kept at it for myself and it turned into something.
One of the
That's what's interesting to me.
One of the things, you know, on that tip that people ask us about a lot is the voice, the inner critic.
Yeah.
The ego, the voices that will attack them as they're trying to make something new.
Right.
How do you work with your inner saboteur?
It might be crap.
You just say, okay, it might be crap.
Right.
So, and part of the thing about turning off your edit button, we'll edit and discuss it later. We're not doing that right now. Right now, we're just getting it out because for some reason, it's in there.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, you had this idea about a thing where there's a girl in a purple dress and there's a Volkswagen and there's this monster with five legs, not four. And there was this thing that happened with a lunchbox and you can't, we're just in the moment here.
To the girl in the purple
all
dress.
All you know is that this thing wakes you up for six months. You can't, just make it so you can get on with it. I sometimes think I wrote my books so that I wouldn't spontaneously combust, so I could free up RAM space.
Mm-hmm.
Do this for you. Do this for you because for some reason it's in there. And if it's, I wrote a kid's book called The Adventures of Dickie Shoehorn. No publishers want it. The only copy is in a thing in that storage room back there. And I had an illustrator illustrate it. His specialty is hot rod illustrations. Dickie Shoehorn, and I had Dickie a t-shirt Shoehorn designed with Dickie's face that says Dickie Lives, and I pictured like book signings where people would like go Dickie Lives, and a theme song. I could play it for you. I think it's in the key of G.
Oh my god!
You know, like, all we're gonna do is get Dickie Lives
and Dickie Shoehorn, 100%. And Dickie goes to the record store, and then he has this dream, and then Dickie, Dickie does not live. Dickie does not live. You know what I mean? So, this seriousness, Dickie. And actually the number one thing I would say to them is there is a lightness on the other side of heaviness. Because I'm just like, I'm an artist. And I got this stuff I got to say. And if I don't say it, that's beautiful because you're taking things seriously. And that's a step forward from pop music lightness. That's just like, everything's cool. Let's dance. So there is a move into, but then there's a lightness on the other side of heaviness, which is we're all going to die. It could be tomorrow. We're all barely hanging on. So you might as well make that thing.
Mm.
There's a sort of lightness in it. And then when it gets flooded and then when people don't show up on time and then you're frustrated, but you're also laughing like, seriously?
We had a spiritual teacher we met in Amsterdam on some of our many travels, and he said, when you're in it, it's a drama. When you witness it, it's a comedy.
Yes, yes. And if you could just see it as the, like, I did tour last year, Australian tour. I show up in Melbourne at the Athenaeum, this big, great theater downtown Melbourne, to do my thing. I walk out on stage for sound check, and there's a 20-foot drop on the lip of the stage, and I look down into an orchestra pit that's been lowered down, you know, the first 10 rows lowered down. And I was like, so they're gonna raise this up and put the 10 rows back there? No. And I was like, hold on, like, when, where's the guy with the lever? And they're like, oh, no, there's a orchestra rehearsal after your show. And I was like, wait. And so I turned to the promoter and I was like, wait. Because connection in this, like being as close as possible to front row, is the juice for me. And they're like, no, we can't do it. That guy's not here and the hydraulic doesn't work fast enough. And I was like, so I'm going to do this. I'm going to talk for 2 hours to this crowd with a 20-foot gap between me and them that goes down two stories into the abyss. like 25 years in, you show up, and I have like 3 seconds of rage towards the promoter, but then I'm like, would you really, in booking this gig, have thought, by the way, there's not going to be a 20-foot gap, is there, in front of this? How would you even know to ask
that? Well, now
that?
You know.
So if you and you can get angry, and you can, or you can just be like, oh, this is one of those moments that reminds me that this is this ridiculous, surreal, absurd thing that we're all doing that once in a while actually means something. And once in a more, we get to realign ourselves with our true self, which is, well, then we're just going to give the gift with even more passion and delight. And somehow we will just bridge that gap all the more. Because apparently that's what tonight we're doing. But if at any point you're not laughing about that, you get, I would argue that the older and wiser you get, that the rage goes from 10 minutes, the first half of the set, to 10 minutes, to 1 minute, to 7 seconds, to 5 seconds, and now you're laughing. Like,
yeah.
Here we are.
Well,
we are.
Right. And then when the woman in Australia yells from the second row an hour and a half in that she's voting for Trump, and the whole room... You can't make that. And now we're having fun because this lady is just, and she's American and she's in Australia. And now you're like, lady, you just gave me 15 minutes of material for free. Thank you very much. Gap included. But that is the thing.
Maybe you needed that protection
all
from her.
All the moments when you get rejected in an audition, all the moments when someone doesn't like your screenplay, all the moments when the other actors freeze you out, whatever, Yeah.
We actually
you're in it.
We actually just came up with a really fun way to deal with people when they get triggered.
Are you going to have us sing the song?
That's it. I feel like we've learned enough about each other that
I feel comfortable.
Has the
whole show been building to this? Is this the finale?
We wrote a song.
Is this like the...
There's a song. this may be the finale.
This is the finale. It must be because it's like the big cane comes out and takes us away.
We can sing the song for Rob, but then I have two more questions and then we can before... Yes. After
would you prefer
sing.
The questions?
Oh, give me
first?
The two questions.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
The we'll end with the song.
Director.
The
like,
thank
make
you.
This thing really sing.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, just on... as we talk about art and being light with it and laughing with it, collaboration. Like, that is something that as I watch people make things with each other and they learn how to be communicators and how to be in collaboration with someone making something new. And I know you wrote a book with your wife. I'm sure you collaborate with people all the time.
My friend Pete Holmes has a show on HBO, and we have a two-man show that we do that we toured around the country. And just the other night, we did another one at Largo. And it's so ridiculously fun. But yeah, that's oh my word. Your question was about collaboration.
Yeah. So, for you, what makes a great collaboration?
Somebody who I actually don't know what they're gonna do next. Wow. If I know, oh yeah, they're gonna. That's not interesting. What's interesting is I have no idea where they're gonna go. Liz Gilbert and I do stuff together, and we did something in Brooklyn last fall. And we had planned what we were going to do. We did like a day-long event. But then right before we went on, we were like, let's just start and see where it goes. And we went back and forth. I think it was right after the election. And we went back and forth. We did 2.5 hours spontaneously on the state of America and stuff that was coming out of her mouth. When you're on stage with somebody and you're the biggest fan in the room at that moment.
Yes.
That's what's interesting. And it doesn't matter how good somebody is, or the worst collaboration is somebody who's like, dude, you'd really like them. When somebody forces it upon you or you're doing it for somebody else. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, sometimes those are you're like, there's nothing in you that's curious about this.
Yeah.
You're just like, I guess I'm supposed to enjoy this. That's no slam on that person, mm-hmm. but I would just begin with who do you think now? I'd love to see what happened with that person.
Mm. Well, I so love that because I think a lot of, as people are starting to make films together and like collaborating with each other, I think that the interest in where the other person's going to go and what they're going to yes. do becomes less important than me controlling my vision. Do you know what I
Absolutely.
Mean?
Absolutely.
So I think that's such a beautiful way
Absolutely.
To think about it.
And I just did an event with an information architecture specialist. There we
Whoa,
go.
All
information
right.
architecture. I will purposely get to with somebody who I know nothing about. And what's interesting to me is pattern recognition.
Mm-hmm.
I know nothing about their thing, but all of a sudden I noticed a pattern that's similar to the mm-hmm. thing. And pattern recognition is actually for artists.
Mm.
If the plumber is fixing your place, ask the plumber questions.
Mm.
And is there anything about what the plumber does? You'll be shocked if you begin with the assumption of pattern recognition.
Yeah.
You will see connections between you and other people that you never would have
yes.
in 1,000 years.
You know what's so funny that you use that example is I often will tell actors, it's so ludicrous that you would think that you would go to an audition and not do a good job because like as if a plumber would ever come to your house and be like, really nervous about this
right,
one.
Right,
hope
right,
I can
right,
plumb
right,
today.
Right.
So,
right.
you know, I make
Haven't
the joke
this.
Of like, you know, a plumber doesn't like
yes.
get stressed about plumbing. He just plumbs. And so
yes.
like an actor shouldn't get stressed about acting.
Yeah, we're doing the work here.
You know,
yeah,
you're
we're
just
doing
your work.
And like trusting the channel.
Trusting
like,
the channel.
Trusting that like
yeah,
when
really
I show up
us.
To do it, it just happens.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
My 17-year-old son is in a bunch of bands, just got back from his first tour.
Ah.
And it's fascinating to watch him realizing all of this.
Yeah.
Going to rehearsal. Tomorrow night he's playing a show at the Echoplex, which is his biggest show yet.
Wow.
And just watching him doing his 10,000 hours.
Yeah.
And watching him get through all the emotional to I play music.
Yeah.
Of course it's going to be great tonight.
Yeah.
I'm going to thoroughly enjoy myself and invite the audience to join me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. it's fascinating watching him do that very, that thing.
That process.
You had yeah. a second question.
Yeah. Love wins.
Yes.
You know, I find it really interesting, this evolution in your own life of going from that 10,000 mega church and then writing that book that was really dangerous. Do you think of it as that,
obvious is the word that comes to mind.
Obvious. I love that answer.
Yeah.
The way that that, what was coming out of you, your inquiry, what you got excited about, what
yeah.
had to come out of you, how that changed your life. I would be curious to know, when did you know you have to write the book? And
Yeah. Well, what's interesting when I got into be a pastor is people then want to talk to you about big ideas,
mm-hmm.
God, and God is just a word for, God is a word that people have used to describe ultimate reality.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is how many people would be like, God is somebody who's going to punish a number of people and maybe have them burn forever. And then I would say, where did you hear that? And they'd say, well, I heard that at church, you know, where that's the good news, isn't it? like
yes,
the number of people
yes.
who, no wonder, I mean, that's like psychologically, no one can bear that. That's psychologically devastating. Is the universe an unsafe place?
Yeah,
that's right.
So part of it was probably just, oh, if you could like, people who have somehow picked that up somewhere, we should show, people need to know that that's a horrific thing and they need to be freed from any of those sorts of messages. So part of it was, in some sense it was just, I should just talk about this because part of it was realizing that the tradition that I came out of, that was a, one small slice way over in the corner, but the dominant was the divine love for everybody.
Yes.
Inclusion was the dominant Jesus message. And how did this message of inclusion for all people of all religions and backgrounds somehow become a chosen few get to go somewhere when they die? So part of it was like an injustice, like this is wrong that people think this is the message. So in some ways, when that book came out, those were things that I'd been thinking about a decade earlier. Maybe.
Yeah, and it was like,
it's almost like you, for me, I have to have lived with it for a while before I put it into a tour, a show, a book or something.
Mm-hmm.
So that for me was like, yeah, I should do, it was just sort of like doing the work.
Yeah.
yeah.
And then turns out that particular made a group of people quite upset.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, but another thing we teach on when we teach about love and empathy is that there's this,
Is this the son?
Preston, you want to say hi?
Yes.
Hey, Preston.
We are, but
this is my son, Preston.
Hi, Preston. Nice to meet you.
Hi.
Preston.
Congrats on your gig tomorrow.
Yeah, Echoplex?
Yeah. Should be fine.
What's your instrument?
I play guitar.
Awesome. Actresses, directors, we're talking about art and creativity.
Yeah, awesome.
Woo.
So cool.
And I'm going to go get Violet in a second.
Splendid.
Okay.
Cool. I thought Violet was doing her gymnastics.
We'll be out here in a minute. Oh, did you think a little show?
We could do gymnastics, but it would not be...
What's the name of your band so we can plug it?
Jane Lane. Best band I'm playing tomorrow. My main band is called Fringe.
Fringe. All right, check
Fringe
it out.
Fringe and Jay Lane.
Just chill. We'll be out in a second.
Sweet. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we teach on that. He's so cute.
He's fantastic.
Yeah. Go see his band. He's so cute. Darwin, when he wrote Survival of the Fittest, he mentions survival. What's the book he wrote about man? Descent of Man. Yeah. So da, da, da. He writes Survival of the Fittest twice, and he writes about love and community like 96 times. But when we remember that in history, we only remember that
my
one
word.
Phrase.
Right.
So it's all just how we pick and choose what we translate and decide what history is made of based on that. And it's all just
stories
open for interpretation.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. We'll wrap up so you can go be a dad.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ready for this magical song?
Oh my word, the anticipation.
Oh my God. Should we tell you right now that neither of us can sing?
I don't think I believe that.
So this is a song like when someone cuts you off in traffic or you're ordering your coffee and someone's giving you attitude from the other side,
or
right?
Or you show up and there's a big orchestra pit and you're a little frustrated.
Okay.
And just in your head, you can sing this little song and you can't possibly stay angry while singing this song. Ready?
Okay.
So ready?
Everybody's doing a great job. Everybody's doing the best job ever.
That's what we sing to each other all the time. So when someone
brings us so much joy that you can't keep being mad.
Just everybody's doing a great job. Everybody's doing the
everyone's
best
and
they
you
know how to do.
Into that song. You do not back off from that. The two of you.
It is full commitment.
Full commitment.
We have so much fun singing it.
I actually thought it was going to be like long with verses and a chorus.
Oh, no.
Though sometimes
that's actually where
really
the power is.
Things.
The power is you knew when to stop.
Yeah.
We know how to make an exit. Speaking of exits, thank you for fulfilling
this.
This
is so fantastic.
This is like me having a Teen Bop magazine on my wall as an 80s child.
I hear
have
you.
Another
and
conversation
then I found
at some
him.
Point.
Can we please?
I'm amazing. Asking you.
Yes.
Okay, good. That,
second date.
Oh, we totally got the second date.
Oh, my God.
You're so wonderful.
Did this go okay? Did we go okay?
Yeah, I thought it went great.
No,
how did it go?
It was fantastic.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Your work is so wonderful. And,
oh, thank you.
And we, as you know, like just love being inspired by you. And even the recent set of podcasts on the kind of like all about what game are you playing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's been so inspiring. So just thank you for doing the work you do.
Yeah. Congratulations on 150 podcasts. It's amazing.
Thank you. Oh, my word. My first congratulations on 150 podcasts.
Amazing.
Yeah.
We listened to it in the car with our coffee very excitedly.
That's so great.
Just thank you for the work you do and for taking this time. And I know our community is going to just love this podcast and having heard from you. So
oh,
thank
that's
you.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Much love to you and your whole tribe.
The whole
thank
tribe.
Thank you so much.
Wonderful.
We'll do it again sometime.
Okay.
Woo.
Great.
Good.
Woo. Hi.
If you want to know about the Create Workshop Series, you can go to
www.thecreateseries.com.
And if you want to know more about us, you can go to kristenhenge.com or
natalieroy.com.
And if you want to come to Create, you can go to
the Actors Green Room in New York City. And it is Sunday nights from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. and Tuesdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m.
And their website is www.theactorsgreenroom.com. And you can buy Create on demand if you don't live in New York City.
Woohoo!